This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The person with a major say on whether we have jobs is set to be confirmed in Washington today.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Players on Wall Street have a note in their calendars for late this afternoon. Janet Yellen should be confirmed as the next chair of the Federal Reserve. This will give Yellen enormous influence on what we pay to borrow money, what returns we get from investment portfolios, and even if we get that job or not. On Mondays, we consult Julia Coronado, chief economist at BNP Paribas in New York. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning.
So Dr. Yellen does not represent a major shift from the policies of Dr. Bernanke.
No, not at all. You could not ask for a smoother transition in terms of monetary policy. And not only do they think alike, but they have been working together through this crisis and sluggish recovery for the past few years. So I would say definitely more of the same, accommodative policy, very gradual removal of stimulus as the economy heals is what we can expect from Chair Yellen.
Now, Treasury Secretary Jack Lew is in Europe this week, meetings about economic policy with counterparts in Germany, France, Portugal. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, it's I think probably the top of the agenda will be financial sector regulation. It's an area where the U.S. has made considerably more progress than Europe, and it's kind of the front burner agenda item for Europe.
They're still working out what to do with their banks in Europe.
Absolutely. How to coordinate bank regulation across the countries within the European Union. And that's, of course, very complicated. And coordination with the U.S. is a far more important issue than we had previously realized before the financial crisis. So there's a lot to talk about.
Julia Coronado at BNP Paribas, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
Congress comes back to work this week, and high on its to-argue-about list, benefits for the long-term unemployed. Those benefits expired for 1.3 million people at the end of the year. The Senate could vote on a measure this week if Democrats can pick up a few Republican supporters. Marketplace's Dan Weissman here on the effects on the wider economy.
Research shows when you take away unemployment benefits, the unemployment rate goes down. But it's not just because some people get jobs. Some people give up on finding a job. You can't collect benefits unless you're looking for work, and you're not counted as unemployed if you're not looking. Chad Stone is chief economist for the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities.
When people give up and drop out of the labor force, that lowers the unemployment rate, but that's not a good way of lowering the unemployment rate. It's not that they're transitioning into jobs. It's that they've stopped searching.
And they can't necessarily get what they need from the local food bank. Melissa Boteic is from the Center for American Progress.
You see, the charities are not really able to keep up with the increased demand, with more and more people not able to make ends meet.
Reinstating benefits would cost $25 billion, and that's a much bigger gap than charities could fill. Boteic says it's five times as much as anti-hunger charities get in donations in a year. In Chicago, I'm Dan Weissman for Marketplace.
Want to see Marketplace live? You can enter to win a chance to join us at the Norse Theater in San Francisco on January 28th as we discuss the new era of philanthropy. Details and rules at marketplace.org/trip. Delta Airlines is the last domestic carrier to fly the DC-9. That's the one with two engines under the tail and a talent for short runways. One final flight this afternoon marks the close of the plane's half-century run. Jim Burris reports from WABE in Atlanta.
All right, Mr. Graham, this is your seat number.
Most passengers about to board Delta Flight 2494 from Atlanta to Akron have no idea their jet was built during the Carter administration. When I mention that to 44-year-old Scott Smith, he lights up.
I think it'd be fantastic. I remember when I was a little kid, I would get those, they don't do this anymore, but you could go to the cockpit, and they would give you these the little metal planes, and I would collect them because we did fly a lot when I was a kid.
A lot's changed in aviation since then, like the planes. Today's jets almost fly themselves. The DC-9 does not.
50, 30, 10.
I'm in Delta's DC-9 simulator with Captain Scott Wolfried. He'll pilot today's final flight. Wolfried says the old DC-9s are fun to fly.
A lot of pilots here at Delta really have a sentimental attachment to the aircraft. It was their first right seat checkout or first left seat checkout.
The DC-9 was designed for short, frequent routes. It brought jet service to most U.S. cities for the first time. Delta launched the airplane in 1965, but sold the fleet in the early 90s to smaller carriers. When Delta merged with Northwest Airlines in 2008, Delta got some of the DC-9s back.
It's been a workhorse.
Robin Barnes has been a Delta flight attendant for 3 decades. She says interior upgrades mean most passengers can't tell the plane is vintage.
The giveaway being, if you look in the cockpit, the framework is still robin's egg blue. But they still run great. I'm kind of sorry to see them go, actually. I like working on them.
The DC-9's final domestic passenger flight is number 2014. This afternoon, it takes off from Northwest's former base, Minneapolis-St. Paul, and lands here in Atlanta. I'm Jim Burris for Marketplace.
And after new regulation in China caused the value of Bitcoin to plummet last month, the price of the online virtual currency is back above $1,000 this morning. In fact, $1,032 at the moment. A year ago, Bitcoin was worth $13. Helping this morning is news that the gaming company Zynga will start accepting Bitcoin as payment. Zynga does Farmville 2, Castleville, etc. Overstock said it's going to take Bitcoin sometime this year. And Victoria's Secret has an app that'll let you swap a little Bitcoin for little bitty underwear. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.